Hey kids, it's Friday, and this is Saffron. Not a full episode this week, because really last night when we sat down to record, we were all really tired. It's been a long week, and the world is full of fuck. But I wanted to sit down and record some things, because there's a few topics that we probably wouldn't touch on again. Video games and the like. So, the first thing I want to touch on this week is that Cyberpunk 2077 has finally got its ESRB ratings, and holy crap, it is a hard M. Those of you who've listened for a while know that I used to play Shadowrun. Me and Tieran and a number of my friends, we had a Shadowrun game going for years and years and years. And eventually we got so powerful that the GM was like, look, we need to do something new because y'all are simply too powerful. It's hard to make encounters that actually challenge you guys anymore. So eventually it faded out and our characters got to retire, which is crazy for a Shadowrun game. But I'm a big fan of the cyberpunk aesthetic. I'm a fan of Shadowrun and its genre. So when Cyberpunk 2077 was first announced like a million years ago, I was really interested to see what they do. And over time, it seems to have had some interesting twists and turns and some interesting choices in terms of the like in-game advertising and the like. But it finally has an ESRB rating. It's gone gold and we'll probably get to play it some point later this year. But the ESRB summary is pretty interesting. I'm just going to read here. So this is a first-person RPG slash shooter in which the players assume the role of a mercenary named V trying to make their way through the open world of Night City. Cool. Players can explore futuristic locations, interact with citizens, perform missions, and engage in combat, yada yada yada. Characters use handguns, machine guns, rifles, explosives, firefights. Players can also use melee weapons, wrist-mounted blades, enhanced limbs, to stab enemies and in some cases dismember them. So we have that going on. Combat is frenetic with frequent gunfire, cries of pain, explosions, and blood splatter effects. Some locations depict mutilated corpses with open chest cavities and or exposed organs slash entrails. During one quest, players assist a character by hammering nails through his hands and feet. Ugh. Screaming sounds and blood effects accompany the scene. How is that assisting somebody? I don't know. The game contains nudity and sexual material. Players can select a gender and customize their character. Customization can include depictions of breasts, buttocks, and genitalia, as well as various sizes and combinations of genitals. Let's get some good meta genital combos going on. Get big ol' titties and a horse cock? Why not both? Why not neither? Little plug-and-play bits. That'd be cool, right? Players can encounter events where they have the option to engage in sexual activities with other main characters or prostitutes. Those brief sex scenes from a first-person perspective depict partially nude characters moaning suggestively and moving through various positions. Some scenes contain brief depictions of thrusting motions. Other scenes depict characters' head moving towards the partner's crotch. The game contains drugs, taking hits from inhalers, billboard ads depict a man snorting speed, and some sequences allow the player to drink alcoholic beverages repeatedly until the screen distorts. Players' characters can also drive cars while drunk. The words fuck and cunt appear in the dialogue. And that's the entirety of the ESRB's rating summary for Cyberpunk 2077, which, honestly, makes me more interested to play the game. Well, not really more than I already was, but the fact that you can, like, hot swap your dick is kind of cool. And obviously this has been one of those games that because it has various little bits of controversy going around it, it's definitely a game where I'm going to wait and see what the ratings shake out to be because you never know. And I'm assuming that they'll get it out there to people early enough that a good solid review of anything ultra squicky will pop up. Though, speaking of ultra squicky, the other gaming related thing that I wanted to hit on this week was that, man, The Last of Us 2 has really not made itself appealing to me. Now, I'm not a fan of post-apocalyptic games, definitely not crapsack post-apocalypses, and especially The Last of Us in its insistence on being misery porn. Like, everything sucks, the mushroom people are everywhere, if you get bit once you die, it's a zombie game but with mushroom people. But one of the quote-unquote new features of The Last of Us 2 is you can psychologically traumatize the enemies, then kill them. The new features include, this is verbatim from a promotional email this person claims on Twitter that they got, dogs. One of the most noticeable new features in the game is the inclusion of dogs. These dogs are in the game to follow your scent and will attack you as soon as they have sniffed you out. The game doesn't pull any punches or, quote, stray, unquote, from the idea that while you're playing as Ellie in a struggle to survive, killing dogs is necessary. You'll also have to deal with the fact that each dog has an owner, which will call out the dog's name and cry in absolute horror when they discover their lifeless furry best friend. You've been warned. So the game wants you to feel really bad for having to defend yourself against dogs that are trained to attack you on sight, and then also feel bad when the person who trained the dog to attack you on sight is sad when you kill the dog that attacked you on sight. Honestly, that really makes me never want to play this game, and very glad that I never invested in the series. Like, I've got literally a pile of 6 copies of The Last of Us Remastered sitting on my desk over there that came with the PlayStation 4 we bought for Fiesta this year, and we don't know what to do with them. But I was never tempted to play the game before, and I'm certainly not tempted to play the game now. I need to figure out something to do with those, because it's like that God of War and Horizon Zero Dawn codes, I think they expire in 2021, so I need to get them to some people, but I have to do it within the sanction of Fiesta. So The Last of Us 2, not a game that I'm super interested in playing. I mean, when the world has reached peak misery, exhaustion. Like, we're dealing with so much shit due to COVID and all this other stuff. The Last of Us 2 is like, hey, we're gonna put you in this bad situation and make you feel bad for playing a video game while the world is really out there making you feel bad. The game's been in production for like a billion years at this point, but they really could not have picked a worse time to try to release it. It's not going to affect its sales that much. I mean, it's a prestige series, you know, it's like, it's an HBO Max prestige series of about sadness and drama and stabbing mushroom people. So if that's what you want to do, cool, but like, I'm the person that goes out of their way to not kill animals in video games if I can help it, so being put into a situation like that in video games is not my cup of tea. Though what is still my cup of tea is definitely Animal Crossing. I just today got my 50-day active resident award in the game, so I have been playing the game since it launched, which apparently was 50 days ago, which is kind of surprising because what the fuck is time, right? But I am continuing to enjoy running around the island, meeting new villagers and whatnot, though I am kind of miffed with Tom Nook. That bastard went out behind my back and sold my empty house plot. One of my villagers moved out. Ed, the big gay horse, finally decided to move on. I'm like, all right, yeah, sure, I'll find somebody else. I went and did a bunch of Nook mystery tours to try to find a villager that I wanted. Gave up after like 8, because they do take a little while if you're actually going to explore the island, get the resources, and then go back. The next morning, I go to the plot, and it has a sold sign, and it's Sprocket, who is a robotic ostrich jock, which is not exactly what I wanted to get in terms of villager, but you know what? The game says deal with it, because Animal Crossing wants you to have a villager of each personality type, and I already had everybody but a jock. And well, guess what? I have a robotic ostrich jock now. So hopefully he won't get into tiffs with the people living next to him, because I have a normal, a peppy, and a lazy villager that are all right there next to him. Fauna, Puddles, and Rex. And so now I'm like, you better not make any of my animals that I like sad, you dumb robot. I will throw you in the ocean. But you'd think that living on an island would be really bad for a robot ostrich. Well, with all the salt air and the like. But what do I know? In other Animal Crossing news, it was very cute. You know, we've got various celebrities playing it. Danny Trejo, Elijah Wood, etc. But apparently last night, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has also gotten into it and was doing visits on people's islands. She opened her DMs for a few minutes, had people send their dodo codes, and she went and visited a bunch of people's islands and left them little notes. There was a screen cap on our Animal Crossing today of someone who was like, oh my god, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez visited my island. And she left the person a note that said, Sharisha, thank you for the lovely tour of your incredible island. It has certainly given me something to aspire to from the United States, in addition to your healthcare system. Smiley face, and then signed, Alexandria from Boogie Down. That is really cute. Like, she made the character look kind of like her, and she has a little shirt that has a custom-designed version of her campaign logo on it, which is really cute. I think it's really cool that we found a way to use Animal Crossing and things like VR chat and whatnot to still be able to reconnect with people online. Like, for me, it's really nice to be able to visit my friends' islands in Animal Crossing, because I can see how our differing design philosophies work out. Like, I've been visiting Ajax's island off and on, and he has a very regimented style. Like, everything is laid out, everybody has a big yard. I've seen other people where they have just massive central areas, which is their space, and all their islanders are on the fringes. And like, the way my island was built out is that I just worked with what I had, because I was stuck in the bottom left corner of the map. And so I was like, I've got my house, the orchard, And then the only thing that's really structured is like the central area and the two shops and the museum are all right near the entrance of the island. And then the rest of the island, past a certain point, I've kept it kind of wild. Like, there's still decor and stuff to make it a five-star island, but I've kept it just be a natural place as opposed to, like, these heavily terraformed areas that I've seen in a lot of other islands. It's been nice. Like, the other night, I had friends that had a shooting star event. And so we were just all standing there typing in the game or typing on Telegram and hitting A occasionally to make the stars light up, and all our little characters did the little like wish on the star motion all together. It was pretty cute. And, you know, we've kind of supplanted our interactions slightly with that. And that's good because that's all we're going to get for the time being. It's a real bummer, but I would rather be in isolation than get the Rona, you know? One of the unfortunate things that's going to be a weird side effect of the Rona hitting us is that we're losing a lot of the self-serve restaurants. Because, I mean, obviously it makes sense. If some random person can come in, get their food, possibly cough, possibly sneeze, you know, a grubby little child gets their paws all over the pizza or whatever, and then puts it down, like, you're introducing all these other vectors of contamination. And so, like, Sue Plantation, which is the company that owns Sweet Plantation and Sweet Tomatoes, which is a salad buffet place, Super Salad and the like, that genre of restaurant. This particular company has just said, well, fuck, and declared bankruptcy. I mentioned it to Panther, and he brought up a good point, that more than likely, now that they're no longer forced to be closed, they also were like, well, we can't open, but because they're not forced to be closed, their unemployment insurance or whatever is not going to be paying them for lost business. And there's like their only other choice is to declare bankruptcy, which unfortunately makes a lot of sense in our health system that we have here, which means that like, all right, so that salad bar place decided they can't stay open. And the health department said they can't stay open. But that also is going to translate out to like CC's and Asian buffets and Golden Corral and the like. I mean, God, these people are whipping out their guns and screaming they got to get their hair did. But what are they going to do if Golden Corral is forced to go out of business because you can't go and get yourself some slop with gravy because it's not safe? You know, we'll see what happens. I highly doubt that the government would be like, no, we got to close down the Golden Corrals. Or I honestly don't believe the Golden Corral would be so concerned for its consumers, honestly. But, you know, it's like, oh, it's the end of the American buffet is one of those weird side effects that you didn't expect from all the Rona. But these are incredibly stupid, weird times that we live in. Also, though, speaking of incredibly stupid, we've been getting the Blue Angels have been flying around. They're the acrobatic flight team in the U.S. Navy. Whoop-de-fucking-do, right? They fly around. They're really close. It's neat. They flew over Dallas. They flew over Fort Worth because we have JRB Carswell over there in Fort Worth. And that's cool and all. But then JetBlue, the airline company, thought that they were going to be extremely fucking clever and do a flyby in New York City with three of their jets. For some reason, guys, the people in New York City don't really like the idea of airliners buzzing downtown for some reason. I just don't know why. So let me kick it back to a couple cool things before I wrap this up. This is only going to be about maybe 20 minutes total this week. It has been announced that Taika Waititi is going to be directing and co-writing a new Star Wars feature film set for theatrical release. Taika Waititi is a really interesting director. He did What We Do in the Shadows and also Thor Ragnarok and Jojo Rabbit, which was a really interesting film that came out last year. And he's a writer on What We Do in the Shadows, which is on FX, which is a really funny comedy series, which is basically the gist is it's a reality TV show that follows three vampires and their various cohorts and their misadventures. And so it's filmed in that style, except, you know, they're supernatural vampires that suck blood. And it's a very, very funny series. I would recommend you check it out. It's getting its second season right now, and there's like four episodes into the second season. It's really enjoyable. We watched it last night. So seeing what Taika Waititi can do with Star Wars, like, my joke was What We Do in the Death Star, which would be just a similar genre piece, but Star Wars, where it's like, oh, we follow some Imperial dudes, or we follow some rebels that are trying to work at a cantina, or blah, blah, blah. You know, something like that would be pretty fun. So we'll see what happens with that. But Taika Waititi is going to do this thing in the future at some point. So all I want is him to bring his Thor Ragnarok energy into Star Wars. That would be extremely fun. Like, we need some fun, goofy Star Wars adventures that aren't, you know, galaxy-spanning bullshit where the Emperor is back and he's gonna blow up every planet with Death Stars. No, just, like, do some heist shit. I enjoyed Solo as a heist movie. That was pretty fun. They could do other genre pieces with the Star Wars universe. Not everybody has to be a Skywalker or related to a Skywalker or be a Jedi, but that's just me. Like, I still haven't even seen the ninth Star Wars film, and I don't know if I'm going to go out of my way to do that anytime soon. But Taika Waititi doing Star Wars sounds really good. And the last thing that I want to talk about this week, as before I wrap this up, edit it down, and send it out to the feed, is I made a horrible gelatin. So you guys might be aware of the Twitter account 70s Party. 70s Dinner Party. It used to be a Tumblr blog, and basically what it does is it finds old cookbooks and highlight some of the really horrible recipes that people tried in the 50s, 60s, 70s, etc. And one of the things that I saw the recipe for was this incredibly bare bones thing called cherry cola salad. And it's 7 ingredients, very minimal things. I was like, oh, this is like a technical challenge on Great British Baking Show, except it's gonna turn out really weird. And so what it is, cherry cola salad, it's 2 small cokes, which is about 20 ounces, 2 packages of cherry jello, which is 1 6-ounce package of jello now, 1 package of plain Knox gelatin, 1 number 2 can, which is a 20-ounce can of crushed pineapple, a number 2 can of black cherries, which the largest I found was 16 ounces, which is fine, a 8-ounce package of cream cheese, and 1 cup measured of pecans. And this is the entire recipe. Take 1 cup juice from the cherries and 1 cup from the pineapple, which there was not a cup of each juice in both, so I had to mix it with water. Heat to boiling and mix with jello, and then add all ingredients together and chill. And that's it. That's the entirety of the recipe from some woman named Claudie Kiger. And it was very interesting. This is the kind of dessert that your weird aunt from the Midwest makes and takes to Thanksgiving family dinner and goes home with 2/3 of it. I thought it was really good, but the actual appearance of it is, well, ground meat. Like, it looked like meatloaf that was uncooked. It tasted fine. Like, it was a jello salad with, like, pecan bits in it and cherry bits in it. And it tasted perfectly fine. It just looked horrific. But I made sure to put it into a bundt cake pan so it had the nice ring mold shape. Posted it to Twitter account. Got a bunch of retweets, a bunch of likes, and generally people not being dicks about it. But lots of like, oh my god, that looks like meat. Ew. You know, whatever, man. A lot of these recipes that you have in these books, you wouldn't make except for, you know, internet fun points, right? The ingredients are really basic and reflect what was really widely available at the time, but it was also just, like, fun to do because you're just winging it. You're like, this recipe is incredibly bare bones, and I'm like, well, worst case, I get a bowl of weird jello. And I got a bowl of weird jello that actually did set up and taste pretty good. I did eat the entirety of it over the course of, like, a week. But I ate it all, and it was good, and I might not make it again because, like, its a color is pretty gross. But, like, doing stuff with old cookbooks, I've got one of these old, like, Southern Heritage Celebrations collection ones. This book from 1980, and, like, it has various holiday-themed recipes from back then. One of them being one they call it like milk punch, where it's just like, hey, take some whipping cream and put rum in it, and then you just drink that shit. Honestly, that's vile. Like, you're drinking heavy whipping cream and just adding rum to it. Why don't you just drink more rum? It doesn't make any sense. But you know what? It's one of the recipes that's just tossed in there in the mix with like lamb brain pate, you know, who fucking knows? Old cookbooks have all sorts of fun stuff. You really should try it because, like, you can see how much our tastes have changed in just the past 50 years. Like, what we have available versus what they had then. So, like, why is there so much jello? Why is there so much of canned meat? Why is, because, well, it's 50 years difference and we now have accessibility of so much more. And this was just people making what they had available to them. So it's worth looking out. So if we survive all this, you should totally go to your local resale shop once they're done and open and all that and see what kind of old cookbooks you can get, because you too can make a horrible Jell-O monstrosity for internet points and then be forced to eat it over the course of a week. So thank you guys for listening. I just wanted to put something out there this week because we were really not feeling up to it as a group last night, but there was a couple things I wanted to hit on, and I don't like leaving you guys hanging. Not going to charge for this on the Patreon, though. If you want to support us on the Patreon, you go to patreon.com/southpawscast. You can find me on Twitter at SavinDrake, and you can send us emails to the show at southpawscast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Good night, and wash your hands.